We are back, and you're listening to the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. I'm Wilmer Leon, joined here by my co-host, Garland Nixon.
Thank you, Wilmer.
Haiti Liberté has a piece entitled Haiti on the Brink. Never have revolutionary conditions in Haiti been so favorable. The government of de facto Prime Minister Ariel Henry is completely illegitimate, ineffective, and unpopular. The U.S. empire is preoccupied and overextended in contending with crises in Ukraine, Israel, Palestine, and Yemen. Conflict with Iran, Lebanon, or China may erupt at any moment. What is the relevance to all of this? Well, for insight, let's turn to our next guest. He's a journalist and editor at Haiti Liberté, and he's the author of this piece, Kim Ives. As always, Kim, welcome back.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be back.
And you continue, but above all, the Haitian masses are fed up, hungry, angry, and ready to begin down the rocky road of revolution, by all indications. In other words, Haiti's, quote, subjective conditions, end quote, are ripe. Where are we now, Kim Ives? And if these conditions are ripe and Haitians start to harvest the fruit of revolution, can the United States stem the tide?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. And right now, it's totally preoccupied, of course, with other fires burning across its empire, with another one bursting into flames almost every day. But Haiti is doing that today as well. Liberation forces in the form of what are essentially Haiti's park rangers, the brigade for the surveillance of the protected areas. That is, these were essentially armed park rangers who were supposed to protect Haiti's parks, have been formed into a militia of at least 15,000, possibly double or triple that, which have marched on Port-au-Prince and began arriving yesterday and today. Today is, as some of your listeners may realize, the day before Haiti's traditional day of changing power, which is February 7th, the day that in 1986 Jean-Claude Duvalier fled the country, beginning 38 years of uprisings. First, that overthrew Duvalier. Then the one that emerged, bringing Jean-Bertrand Aristide into power in 1990, again in 2000. Then in more recent years, you've had really an uprising calling for a revolution in the form of the Jimmy Cherizier movement, the G9, which we've talked about on this program. And now this one is led by a guy called Guy Philippe, who in fact had been part of the movement to oust Aristide back in 2001 to 2004. But really, he was coming from almost a sort of an ultra-left position where he felt that Aristide had betrayed his original vows in his first iteration in the 1990s. And but, you know, in any case, it was a terribly wrong thing to do. He's semi-apologized on radios and in a couple of speeches he's been making around the country. But right now, he's kind of the catalyst of this movement. And so we're watching now as these forces reach Port-au-Prince. He is in Pétionville as of this morning. The big question is, are they going to end up doing battle with the police, which are essentially the last line of defense for Ariel Henry? Or is Ariel Henry at the last minute going to do a switch-o-change-o and put in a woman called Mirlan Maniga, who is the head of essentially the council that is behind his government, and thereby try to cut the legs out of this movement?
Let me ask you this, and you've been speaking about lately, writing about the other things that are going on outside of Haiti, the ICJ, the French being kicked out of the Sahel, And you know, these other movements now that are pushing back against imperialism. Do you think that the Haitians are looking at that as inspiration, looking at that as a sign that there's change in the world or opportunity? How do you think these things outside of Haiti are affecting the attitudes of the Haitians towards fighting for their freedom?
Totally. This is totally part of it. Guy Philippe often compares himself to Thomas Sankara or Hugo Chavez, as well as the leaders in the Mali and Niger and Burkina Faso. So, he's a former soldier who turned into a police chief, a policeman. So, you know, he sees himself as sort of that liberating military kind of guy. And I think Haitians in general are very attuned to the tune going on in the empire now, which is one of the really a funeral dirge. And we can see that, for instance, the legal defeat that the U.S. got in the ICJ just last month added to their, conviction that this is the moment that you can really rise up. And of course, this is when nationalist movements have begun to prevail historically, is when imperialist powers are preoccupied with either fights among themselves, like the Second World War. You know, we saw the emergence of the Arbenzes in Guatemala or Vargas in Brazil or Perón in Argentina. And in Haiti, you had Dumarsais Estime, who was some kind of semi-nationalist. So this is a moment, I think, when we'll begin to see the emergence of these national liberation struggles, essentially, it's certainly not over. Even if they manage to drive out Henri and take power, then, the full force of the empire's toolkit will come to bear on them. But It does look like they're about to take another step forward.
There is another piece in Haiti Liberté, Deep Concern in Washington. Berthony DuPont writes about the gangs and how they were programmed and how the plan was to use the gangs as a unstabilizing force. But it seems as though Ariel Henri is losing control, basically, of the Frankenstein monster that has been created. Your thoughts?
Yes, that's just it. They were using the gangs in two sense. One, they had deals with the gangs. They were essentially in cahoots with some of the biggest gangs who have explained their relationship with the government in radio interviews. But two, it became kind of the excuse to have the Kenyans deployed from Africa into Haiti to supposedly put down the gangs, which, you know, is absurd on its face, 1,000 troops. But, you know, these are infamously brutal and corrupt, and it wouldn't be enough anyway to deal with some 200 gangs. No, what Guy Philippe has said is that, you know, we need to, and others, we need to organize ourselves. Why aren't they investing the $200 million that they're offering to pay the Kenyans to come across the planet to come to Haiti? Why don't they invest that in the Haitian police or in, forces in Haiti? No. They want to bring in this other force and essentially duplicate the two previous interventions and occupations that they carried out, one in 1994 and one in 2004. They're just using the Kenyans, as you've said, the first minstrel show at the beginning, which will then pave the way for U.S. troops to come in under the Global Fragility Act under a 10-year deal, if they can get an elected government in power. It's looking very remote possibility at this moment.
Really quickly, you mentioned using the Kenyans to come in, and now the Kenyan Supreme Court has come in and said that they can't do that. Where is the United States with that? Have they, because the United States has signed an agreement with Kenya, a military support agreement. And I always saw that as being part of the down payment on the U.S. using Kenya for its machinations in other countries as well. What is that? Is that scheme dead, or any insights there?
No, this is essentially what we're experiencing right now is a race between the empire with the Kenyans working to get the Kenyans over here. What Ruto did, the first thing he said once the High Court, it wasn't actually the Supreme Court, it was the High Court, which can be appealed to an appeals court or the Supreme Court. But the High Court said, no, you can't send policemen because the Constitution doesn't allow it. Under a bilateral arrangement, you could, the court said. And now that's what, after saying he was going to appeal the ruling, William Ruto, the president of Kenya, said that, no, now what I'm going to do is we're going to fast-track a deal, an agreement between Haiti and Kenya, which will allow the troops to be sent immediately, quote unquote. That's his word. So they're trying to get them out the door this week, even. But, you know, it looks like they may be, a dollar short and a day late.
Kim Ives, as always, thank you so much for your time. Greatly, greatly appreciate that analysis, and we look forward to having you back.
Thanks, guys.